We're driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. Leveraging over 140 million qualifications and preferences every day, Indeed's matching engine is constantly learning from your preferences. So the more you use Indeed, the better it gets. Join more than 3.5 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent fast. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/Blue Wire. Just go to Indeed.com/Blue Wire right now and support our show by saying that you heard about Indeed on this podcast. That's Indeed.com/Blue Wire. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
Philip has just lost the respect of the Youth League football team he coaches. He was asked what New England should do in the draft, and his answer was objectively terrible. The Athletic just wrote a great article about this, but Philip doesn't have the Athletic or the respect of a boisterous group of 11-year-olds who once looked up to him. Learn from Philip's error, get the Athletic, and get the info you need to speak draft fluently.
Angie's List is now Angie, and we've heard a lot of theories about why.
I thought it was an eco move. Fewer words, less paper.
No, it was so you could say it faster.
No, it's to be more iconic.
Must be a tech thing.
But those aren't quite right. It's because now you can compare upfront prices, book a service instantly, and even get your project handled from start to finish.
Sounds easy.
It is, and it makes us so much more than just a list. Get started at Angie.com. That's A-N-G-I. Or download the app today.
Welcome to Bear in Mind, the official podcast of Cal Athletics. Here's your host, Todd McKim.
Hi, everybody. Todd McKim, and welcome to another edition of Bear in Mind, the official podcast of Cal Athletics. So, Coach Wilcox joining us momentarily, a little bit later on. We'll talk to one of the players about the upcoming game this week against Oregon State University on the road. We'll be with you Saturday morning at 11:30 with a pregame show, and then 12:30, a little bit after that, to kick off from Corvallis, the Bears against the Beavers. Joining us now is Coach Wilcox. So let's talk about the immediate news as we tape this early in the week. Two great pieces of news today. First of all, let's start with the graduation success rate for football. Now, the entire athletic department had a tremendous increase. 87% of all the athletes, that's over 800 student athletes on campus, successfully graduated from Cal. That's incredible. And an all-time high for football at 80%. First of all, congratulations. I mean, that's tremendous for everybody involved, not just the coaches, players, but your support staff doing a really good job with these players.
Yeah, it is. And it matters. And it takes a lot of people to make that happen. The support staff that you mentioned, the administration providing the structure for us to help these guys, and then ultimately recruiting. And, the previous staff recruited good guys, and we're fortunate for that. And then we've been able to continue that, recruiting the right type of people that fit in here and that are able to be successful. And it's not, as you know, it's a challenging academic environment. And that's a good thing, because I think we got the type of guys that want that. And in the long run, it really does pay dividends for them.
Yeah, it doesn't really do you a whole heck of a lot of good to, I mean, it's in one respect, I guess it's good. We've got a top 10 recruiting class or top 20 recruiting class. Okay, that's great on signing day, right? And it's great for the next couple of months. But if the kids you recruit, the young men you recruit, can't get through school, then that doesn't make any sense whatsoever. So how in depth do you go when it comes to recruiting these student athletes to make sure not only do they have the grades that they need to have to get into Cal, the courses that they need to get in, but also that they have a chance to be successful here?
Yeah, the easy part is really looking at the GPAs and the test scores, because it's, it kind of is what it is. Now, not all high schools are the same. And so we really try to dig in, and it's a comprehensive dive into who are they, you know, how do they perform in school? Do they work at it? Are they interested in school? Has it been something that's been a priority in their home? And you kind of take all that into account, because there's some guys that, you know, maybe their GPA is a little lower, but man, they're really intelligent with the right structure and guidance, they're going to be really successful. And so I think we really look at all that. And as you mentioned, it doesn't benefit anybody to bring somebody in here who is going to struggle to matriculate. I think we know that for the football program, it's a lot of investment of time and energy and resources into our student athletes, which we want to do and provide them, that support. But they got to A, want to do it, and B, have the ability to do it. And so you mentioned it earlier, it doesn't benefit the player or the program if somebody comes in for 1 year or 2 years and it just doesn't work out because the academic fit isn't there. So we really try and figure that out early, and that's a priority in recruiting, making sure we know, the type of person and the character and the academic profile that we're getting.
Yeah, sometimes I wish the recruiting sites who make the ratings, they'd reevaluate like 2 weeks into fall camp or something like that. I know that's a lot to do and it's asking too much, but that would be the true evaluation. And of course, results on the field would be the ultimate evaluation over time. But it'd be interesting to see how maybe some of those ratings would change if you did that.
It might even be 2 years into.
Could very well.
It really is. There's just so many unknowns, and there's the ability in high school and who they're playing against, and their structure that they have, or the academics that they've been kind of put through, and then how that transition takes place. Then they leave home and they get older and develop physically and emotionally, personally, and there's just a lot can change. And so usually you have a much better idea 2 years in, sometimes 2 weeks, but most times it's 2 years.
Did I read somewhere where UC Berkeley or the Berkeley system, or is it college football in general, discounting test scores as part of the requirement now?
Yeah. Still the NCAA requires it, but the school has decided not to, just because of, there's, like anything, if you train for something, the SAT, ACT, and you have the resources and the ability to go train for something, then you're probably going to do much better than maybe someone who doesn't. It doesn't always have there's correlations certainly, but I don't know that there's always a great correlation between their intelligence. Sometimes there's people who are educated and not intelligent, and then there's people who are intelligent and not educated. And I think, trying to sort through all that. So that was a university decision, and as I said, the NCAA still requires it.
I see. Okay, sounds good. The other good news this week, early in the week on Tuesday, Elijah Hicks, one of 20 football players around the country, nominated for the Jason Witten Collegiate Man of the Year Award. Of course, Elijah Hicks has done a lot of good things off the field. Tell us about some of the things he's done and what a leader he's become on your football team.
Oh, geez. Well, no more deserving guy. It's been pretty neat to have 2 years in a row somebody on the All-State Good Works team. Last year, Marcel Dancy for his work with the Oakland Youth and the Oakland Dynamites. And then this year, Elijah Hicks on the All-State Good Works team. And then Elijah being nominated for the Jason Witten Award, the Man of the Year. And just a real humbling. I mean, this guy, throughout his career here, it's just been, really everything you want as a teammate, as a leader and competitor and football player. He's just, he's just an unbelievable person, and really grown a lot here. And you see him, what he's done off the field. He's, he was involved with the kind of a food bank here at the university that he helped put together, and then raised over $60,000 for the No Kid Hungry, kids that are being affected by COVID-19, and really just an amazing guy. And as I said before, it's humbling to be around guys like that who at his age have the maturity and the clarity to know what's right and to do something about it. And you know, even the adults, players obviously, but even the coaches and the administrators and the adults that he comes into contact with, you're just, you know, in awe of this guy and his heart and what he's trying to do for humanity. So I just couldn't say enough good things about Elijah.
Yeah, he's a semifinalist, one of 20 for the Jason Witten Collegiate Man of the Year Award. So congratulations to Elijah Hicks, a young man who committed to Notre Dame at one point and then committed to Cal. I believe it was and stayed committed to Cal as you became in your first winter there in January. So a guy that's a true and wanted to be at Cal for all the right reasons. It wasn't just because of football. It was all the other reasons. So congratulations to him. All right, let's take a look at the little review of UCLA. You've looked at the tape. You had a couple of days to digest that and then begin to move on for Oregon State. What did you see on the tape in that UCLA game?
I saw the things that were obvious in the game, it felt like, and then as we watched the tape, became apparent, you know, defensively, just the tackling was a major issue for us. I think if we would have tackled a bit better, we would have got off the field 2 to 3 more times, and that game's totally different. Offensively, it was just maybe finding our rhythm a little sooner, and, you know, it was just kind of, you know, 10 out of 11 maybe on one play and 10 out of 11 on the next, and I think we can all be better. Coaches, as soon as we got on the plane, started thinking about, okay, what practice-wise can we do? What can we do to help these guys move forward with some of the issues that came about during the game? Same thing on offensive coaches and defensive coaches we've all been going through that with a fine-tooth comb the last couple of days. And then the players just going out and executing. I think we all expected to play better as a team, and we didn't get that done. And really not one unit or position group on the team played well enough to win. But you give the UCLA credit, and then we have to address the things that we didn't do well so we can perform better in the future.
We've seen tackling an issue at the beginning of each team's season. And I can remember the first game I watched this year, I think it was BYU and Navy. The Navy had done no contact work in their prep leading up to BYU. BYU is a bigger physical team and they have a terrific season, but the tackling issue has been extremely noticeable and has gotten better for teams as they continue through the season. But once you're in the season and you were put behind by quite a bit, how do you catch up, or can you catch up, or how do you address that?
Yeah, you continue to drill it. And we drill tackling every day. It's just not one of those things that you can totally simulate, especially when we do it, you know, you do it with bags and sometimes with people, but simulating it with a explosive athlete, you know, isn't the same sometimes. And so we're going to continue to drill it. The past month we've tackled some, we haven't gone live as much as we traditionally do. And there's reasons for that. We thought kind of as we prepared for the season, there were certain things there's give and take there. And this year and kind of the unique nature of it. We all thought we would tackle better. We didn't. So we got to continue to work on it and drill it and try and replicate those situations as best we can. But as I mentioned, there's certain times where you don't replicate the speed and quickness of the guy carrying it in the game. And so we're going to continue to work it and stress it and talk about leverage and technique and effort to the ball and look forward to improving on it.
Offensively, just couldn't seem to get in a rhythm, couldn't string together, you know, first downs. You had the one nice drive in the second quarter. Chase got the touchdown run. And it was a tough day throwing the football as well. And maybe that's to be expected, you know, based on what's happened over the course of the summer, training camp, not being able to go live 11 on 11 as well. But where do you see and how do you see that being better this week?
Yeah, I just think the video is going to show us a lot. And we were able to watch that yesterday with the team. I think each position group offensively had things that are fixable. And obviously we would have loved to maybe been better in the game, but we weren't. And we'll look at those things with the coaches and have a plan to improve on them this week so we can play better this week, which we all expect to. But again, I think it goes back to, you know, coaches, we got to, you know, put them in drills where these things are being addressed. And then the players got to take that from the drill work to the practice and then ultimately to the game.
Special teams did some good things, I thought. I mean, you got the block punt on the first series of the football game, the first block punt in 5 years since 2015. Dario Longhetto knocked home his first field goal on that drive, 31 yards. And then you might have the most versatile kickoff guy in the country too. Tommy Christakos, a young freshman out of Arizona, a big guy that you expect to be a wide receiver at some point in time as well. Talk about that.
Yeah, I thought you said it. Having the block punt early was huge. Great play by Craig Woodson. Really good scheme there by Charlie Ragle. That was something that we really put in on Friday. So nice job there. And Craig made a really nice play on it. Next time we'll look forward to punching that thing in. But Dario was able to knock down that first field goal, which would be great for him. You know, Tommy Christakos, first play of the season for us, you know, bangs it out of the end zone. And the more he kicks, he hasn't been able to kick a whole lot this fall camp for a couple reasons, but the more he kind of kicks and gets into that rhythm, we expect him to be a really good kickoff guy. And he's also has a chance to be a really good receiver. This is not just a, hey, he's moving to kicker, you know, situation. He has a chance to be a good receiver, and we're going to continue to work with him there. I also thought our punter did a great job for never punting in a football game before. I mean, he had some really nice punts and made it hard to return for the way they were, you know, setting up their returns. So good job by all, I thought, on special teams.
Yeah, the football world lost one of the all-time, all-around football players of all time this last week. And Paul Hornung, people forget that. I mean, he was the Heisman Trophy winner at Notre Dame and started as a halfback and those great Vince Lombardi, student body left, student body right kind of things. But he was a pretty good kicker in his day as well. And you think about the old days, you know, we're going back a ways, at least I am, you know, 50s, 60s, you had, you know, George Blanda was a kicker. You had Lou Groza was a lineman. There was a guy for the Colts. His last name was Michaels, was a left-footed kicker as well. Those days are long gone. Kickers are just kickers. And that's pretty much all they do, right?
For the most part, specialists. I think, you know, I haven't seen this one in a while where it's a skill position player that kicks off. From time to time, you'll see a punter, you know, can play another position, but it's become such a specialized position and guys really train from an early age to do it. So it's pretty neat to have Tommy doing that. And, you know, Jamison Sheehan can also run, you know, or punter, he can run it. So that can, you know, maybe provide some options down the road.
Yeah, no question. All right, let's turn the page and look ahead to Oregon State this week. Saturday, we'll be on the air at 11:30 with a pregame show, 12:30 kickoff, Reser Stadium. The Bears against the Beavers. This is a team that's 0-2, but that's a little misleading because you look at their first game against Washington State. They got way behind and then made a terrific comeback and were maybe an onside kick away from possibly tying or winning that football game. And then this last week in Seattle against the Huskies, they lose 27-21, but they got the ball, you know, inside the Husky 5-yard line in a controversial spot. If you're talking to Oregon State fans, on third down run and a fourth down run, and they don't get the first down, they don't get the touchdown, and they lose the game to the Huskies. So 0-2 is misleading. This is a team that under Jonathan Smith has always been able to move the ball, and that's his background. He was a quarterback. You played against him back in 1999 at a time in which that series kind of went back and forth, the home team winning those games. Did you play in that 1998 game, the double overtime game as well?
Yeah.
That was one of the wildest games I've ever seen.
Yeah.
Mike Riley was the coach. And then the next year, Dennis Erickson came in and they had a really nice run. And in 2001, they may have been the best team in the country when Jonathan was a quarterback there. So they went 11-1 and won the Fiesta Bowl. But he's an offensive minded guy. What do we see from a Jonathan Smith offense?
Yeah. Jonathan's a really good coach. I've known him for a long time and ton of respect for him. They do a nice job. I mean, they really keep you off balance. Everything's complementary. You know, when they run the ball or throw the ball, a lot of it will look the same. They're multiple with position personnel groupings, you know, so you'll see some one tight end, two tight end. You see a guy in the backfield, a mover. They got a recognizable name there at tight end.
Yes, I do.
Who's a good player. Their O-line's well-trained. You know, we all know Coach Mahler, who was here, does a really nice job with them. So they've always done a great job on offense, and it'll be a challenge for our defense going in. The guy running it, it's a very talented runner, Jamar Jefferson. So they just do a really good job, and we'll have to, you know, be really disciplined, and we're going to have to play real fundamental football and get off of blocks and tackle well.
Yeah, you mentioned the familiar name, so we might as well give it. That's Luke Musgrave from Bend, Oregon, Central Oregon. His dad was Doug Musgrave, who is the younger brother of our offensive coordinator, Bill Musgrave. So you're quite familiar with the family. You're quite familiar with Luke as well.
Yeah, yeah. He is a talented player, and we recruited him out of high school, and he's doing a nice job there. They, you know, getting the ball and stretching the field. He is a big physical guy and a big part of their offense. So, like I said before, they'll do a good job of keeping people off balance, you know, run and pass and play action game. So it'll be a real challenge for the defense going in this week.
And defensively, it just appears to be that the linebacking core is probably the strength of that defense. They've got some good linebackers. Mm-hmm. Avery Roberts leads the conference in tackles, but the guy to keep an eye on is one of the better pass rushers in this conference and in the country, Hamika Rashid. Last year he had 14 sacks. He had 22 tackles for loss. He had 3 sacks against us in that game in Berkeley. Now, I don't know if teams are giving him special attention or not, but he only has 5 total tackles after 2 games. But, I mean, he is a disruptor defensively.
He is. He's a very talented player. I mean, he's big and strong. He can rush the quarterback. He sets the edge on defense. You know, they do a good job with him, putting him in those positions where he can make some plays. And yeah, where, you know, the number of tackles maybe in the first couple of games would seem a bit low, but he's certainly impacting the game. And I know that doesn't always show up on the stat sheet, but we notice him as well as the other linebackers in there. So I know those coaches well. I know the defensive coordinator, Coach Tibbs, and I worked together for a few years back. And so they'll be ready. They'll be well coached and prepared to play with a good scheme too. So, and ultimately always come down to just, you know, our guys, our 11 on the field and our execution and the detail of our play, that will determine the outcome of that play and the game ultimately.
Well, you may get a break on the weather. Although as both you and I quite familiar with Oregon weather, if you don't like that day's weather, just wait a day and it'll change. But at this point in time, it's supposed to be a decent day. Rain on Thursday, rain on Sunday, but not on Friday and Saturday. You've got a midday game. So hopefully you'll have a good weather and try to keep that chainsaw roaring at a minimum. That can get to you. That's for sure.
Absolutely.
All right, Coach. We appreciate your time. We'll talk to you later in the week. Get ready for the pregame show. But have a good week of practice and keep everybody healthy too.
Great. Thanks, Todd. Go Bears.
Head coach Justin Wilcox. Well, joining us now is senior linebacker Coyne Deng, who is listed at 6'6". I'm going to have to get your honest estimation as to what you weigh these days, because a year ago you were about 225. What are you sporting now?
Sitting around 250.
250?
Yeah.
Wow. Must have done a lot of work in the offseason, a lot of eating as well. Tell us what it was like to put on some weight to play that inside linebacker position.
Yeah, man. You know, just trying to, you know, do all the extra things in terms of diet, you know, obviously putting in the work in the weight room. And, you know, you stack good days on top of good days. And, you know, eventually you turn into weeks and months and, you know, you get the results that you want. So, you know, it's just a lot of hard work and focus and consistency.
What's the eating like now in this COVID period where they feed you after practice, but you can't go to the cafeteria? You got to, you know, eat on your own a little bit more. What's it like for you?
You know, it's fine. You know, just kind of finding a way. You know, I always just trying to find a way to be resourceful and, you know, make sure you're not falling off with this. You know, it's going well for me.
Practice this week. First time in a while that you guys have played 11 on 11. You missed a couple of weeks of popping against some of those offensive players. Tell us what practice has been like early this week.
Yeah, we're definitely glad to have the line of scrimmage back. You know, we miss those guys. those are my brothers. So, you know, it's good. You know, we've been doing some of our, you know, kind of staple drills of our program. You know, team 2 huddle, you know, team no huddle. And, you know, just real team periods, getting after each other physically. guys on the scout teams, the service teams, when they're going up against the one defense that, they're trying to run hard and get the best of us. And, the guys, our scout defense guys, giving the offense a look, they're also trying to, get good work and finish with the ball carrier. So, when the younger guys in the program are that locked into practice and working that hard to give us a good look, then I think it certainly sets us up to be successful.
Can you tell the folks that are listening to this that maybe did not play football what it's like to not have practiced basically 11 on 11 with some hitting for 2 weeks and then had to go play a game against UCLA? I mean, tell us how difficult that was to make that transition.
Todd, I'm not one to make excuses. So, at the end of the day, you got to go out and compete and make the most of any situation. But it was certainly tough. We were just excited when we got the go-ahead on it would have been Friday afternoon that we got a chance to play on Sunday, and that those guys, their quarantine was going to end. We were just excited to get the opportunity to go out and play. So, no excuses. Whenever you got to go out and compete, you've got to go out and do your best. And, that's the competitive spirit. So, it's tough, but we're just glad to have a full week to prepare and get ready for this next game.
I think everybody was excited to play, despite what all the conditions were. I mean, you guys have wanted to play for a long time now. The season now gets condensed to it was a 7-game schedule. Now it's a 6-game schedule, and hopefully it remains a 6-game schedule and you can play the final 5 games. But it's really difficult for all of you that have put so much work and time and energy into getting ready and then have it postponed, and then it's back on, and then it's a shortened season, and then you can't play the first game. I mean, it's just been an absolute roller coaster. I don't know how you guys have been able to handle this, because it's tough for us as broadcasters. We want to be participants and tell the folks at home what's going on, but as players, you just invest so much into what's going on. So I know you guys are excited about getting week number 2 in the books with Oregon State coming up, and we'll talk about them a little bit later on. But last year, you came onto the field, you earned a starting position, and for virtually every snap, you look to your side and there's a guy named Evan Weaver. Okay, and you two guys were the most prolific tandem in college football last year in tackling. You guys averaged a combined 23.2 tackles per game. Now, he led the country, and you were third in the Pac-12, so you got your share, but it seemed like Evan wanted to take every tackle. Was that the feeling you got too?
Oh yeah, he was certainly greedy. So I had to be greedy too. So
you were greedy enough to be third in the Pac-12. So that's pretty good greedy. Well over 100 tackles. That's a tremendous season. So now you come into this season, and you look to your side, and you got somebody that hasn't played a whole lot. Okay, it's not Evan Weaver, who's the Pac-12 player of the year, but it's an Evan Tattersall or somebody else in there. What's it been like for you trying to help the person beside you come along?
It's a great experience. Obviously being the two guys in the middle, there's so much command and leadership in that role. We want to be the guys who make the whole thing go. And so, me and Evan Weaver, we had a great relationship. Still have a great relationship to this day. And I think we really pushed each other and got the most out of each other. And now being able to play next to Evan Tattersall, the new Evan, it's been a great experience so far. And, we're just going to continue to, push each other. I'm going to continue to push him. And, he has a lot of great tools. He's a great athlete, really big, strong, fast guy. And he's really smart. And, I think our personalities just mesh really well. And, he's going to play some good ball, for the years to come. So I'm just excited to get to be around him and, continue to push him. And I think, by year's end, you're going to see him play some really good ball.
He will play good ball because he's very athletic. You can see that in this game. He can fly around. He's fast. He can get to the ball and a physical. He was really good player at Granite Bay as a fullback and a linebacker, and you can see that athleticism. When you guys looked at the tape on Monday, what did you see? Where do you see the improvement coming this week?
A couple of things. Just continue to be on the same page. Tackling was a big thing, I think as people got tired, technique really, really broke down and, you know, continue to put that discipline and that intensity throughout the course of the game. I think we started out pretty well and, you know, just continue to break down. Definitely, you know, just continuing to, you know, steal that conditioning and practice, continuing to, you know, work on your technique, finishing. It's, you know, you got to kind of emphasize finish. That's what it's all about. You know, playing on defense is finishing ball carriers, you know, sprinting to the ball, sprinting out the stack, 11 has to the ball. So, you know, these are all things that, you know, I'm stressing and, you know, our coaches are stressing. So, you know, just bringing that effort, bringing that intensity and, you know, just bringing your technique with you, you know, even when you're tired.
This week, you're going to have to do all of that and more because Oregon State wants to run the football. We've seen that in their first two games against Washington State. And then last week against a pretty stout Washington defense, they ran the ball very well, could easily have won that game. And they've got one of the premier backs in this league, Jamar Jefferson. He didn't play against you last year as he was injured, didn't play in that game. But when you look at him on tape and what Oregon State likes to do running the football, what's the key to trying to slow that down?
You know, just like I said, it's going to be, you know, playing with that desire, playing with that physicality, you know, lining up and, you know, getting off a block and finishing the ball carrier. That's what it's going to come down to. You know, 11 halves to the ball and, you know, trying to minimize those gains. You know, and I think if we just line up, play sound, fundamental football, then, you know, I like how we line up.
Certainly, yeah, we all do because we know this defense is capable of some really good things. All right, let's get away from the football part of this, because when you grew up, you were probably more known in high school as a basketball player. You averaged over 19 points a game. Your team made it to the state semifinals. But you have said, from what I've read, that football was always the sport you loved the most, and you decided to cast your lot with football, going to VMI to start with. Then you ended up in Southeast Kansas. Coyne, how do you go from just outside of Washington, D.C. to a small little town in Southeast Kansas at Independence Community College?
I'm still trying to figure out the same thing, Tom. But, you know, it's a great community out there. You know, I met some really nice, special people in Independence, Kansas. So, you know, they got some nice people out there.
Well, you play in a really good football conference, they do. I mean, that Jayhawk conference is really good in athletics. People don't understand that. You figure, well, Kansas, yeah, they're going to be good in basketball because that's kind of a big deal in the state of Kansas with KU and Kansas State. But football, that is really good competition out there. What was it like there for the short period of time?
You know, it was certainly a year of growth. You know, it was a year of just continuing to invest in myself, continuing to bet on myself. You know, I wasn't the most highly recruited kid coming out of high school, but, you know, I felt like I had potential to, you know, be a good ball player. And, you know, I believed in myself. I believed in my work ethic and my character and, you know, the things I brought to the table. And so, you know, it was an opportunity for me to reset the recruiting process for myself. You know, in a year, I was able to really, you know, go from unknown to, you know, being the top player in my position. And like you said, Jayhawk, there's some good competition there. Some really special athletes. You know, we had a lot of them at Indy, and, you know, throughout the league, you know, you see a lot of guys who are there for different reasons. You know what I'm saying? So whether it's academics, you know, whether it's guys, you know, kind of being in trouble in the past or, you know, being underrated, you know, like I was, or, you know, guys who just, you know, kind of got to get around NCAA transfer rules, you know, just decided to go play a year of JUCO ball. You know, you see a lot of guys, you know, like former All-American type players, guys who were starting at Power 5 schools, you know, trying to get back to another Power 5 school. So, you know, you look at those top teams in the conference, you know, you look at those guys, you know, and their, you know, their physical abilities, you know, a lot of special athletes. So, you know, it's good competition for sure. You know, I'm glad I went there. You know, the coaches there really helped me out in terms of resetting my recruiting process. And you know, Coach Jason Martin, the defensive coordinator there, you know, he was recruiting me to play at Indy. You know, he really caught my attention with, you know, something he told me. And he told me, you know, if you come here, you know, you be yourself and you lead by example and work hard every single day, you'll be able to go wherever you want in the country. And, you know, that kind of that rang true, you know, a year later for me. And so, you know, I'm forever grateful to that staff. And, you know, I stay in touch with them to this day.
Well, you continued on the theme, go west, young man, go west. And now you're on the West Coast. You're in Berkeley, the incredibly diversified, top-notch university. What attracted you to Cal?
Honestly, man, this was one of the easiest decisions I ever made in my life. I think just everything about it. First and foremost, I have some family in the area. My oldest brother, who I lived with when I was in high school, and his wife and three kids, they live in East Palo Alto, down there in Stanford territory.
Yeah, that's enemy country over there, isn't it?
Yeah, unfortunately. So, I got to buy them a Cal flag or something just to let the people know. But, obviously having some family here in the area, I was really intrigued by the Bay Area, so much of the history that comes with it. Berkeley being one of the premier institutions in the entire world. It's always been more about ball, been about more than ball to me. The coaching staff, and their ability to develop players, coach them up and teach them the details and, really teach them the game. Some guys learn how to do their job, playing college football, and some guys really learn the game. And, I feel like these coaches have really been teaching me the game, and I'm really grateful for that. I just loved it. Like, I love the school. Like, if I wasn't a football player, I'd still want to go here. You know what I mean? And that was something that was important to me. I think being a high recruited guy, a lot of people, expect you to just get caught up in the hype and, want to go to the LSUs, the Auburns, all those schools that, I got recruited by. But for me, committing to go to Cal was the easiest decision I've made in my life. Whenever I'm done playing ball, they need to recruit me to be the recruiting coordinator, because I feel like every kid in the country should want to go here. You know what I mean? Yeah. And I truly believe that.
Well, I'll let Benji know that you're after his job. Okay.
I could be his assistant. Yeah.
You could be his. Well, you'd have to be in charge of the barbecue, because that's what Benji does as well as anybody. Some of those barbecues that he fires there. That's pretty Benji impressive stuff.
Benji goes crazy on that grill. So
he does. Now, your family is from the Sudan, and obviously you grew up in this country in a place called Aldi, Virginia, which is a little less than 40 miles west of Washington, D.C. But your family's from the Sudan, and does your dad still live in the Sudan? He came over here originally and then has gone back. Is that the case still?
Yeah. So, my family, is from Sudan, kind of got caught up in the Civil War, the second Civil War that was going on there, and, displaced, over 4 million refugees. So we came to the United States as refugees of war. And, my six kids, the three oldest were born back in East Africa. The three youngest were born here. So I'm the second youngest. So I was born here. We came about 3 years before I was born. And, my dad went back, some years back. And, obviously it's a bit really big part of who I am, the history of where we come from and what we stand for. My mom really instilled a lot of those values in me, understanding that, we come from a place that is not at peace. You know what I mean? And, we're living a dream, to be able to pursue everything that we want. For me to be able to be at the University of California, Berkeley, finishing up my studies, graduating in a month, it means more to my family than anything I'll ever do on the football field. So, just trying to continue to, be a role model, and put my community first. That's one of those things that kind of keeps me humble, understanding where I come from and, who I represent.
Well, your parents have to be incredibly proud of you. I mean, just incredibly proud that you're succeeding not only athletically, but academically to get your degree from Cal. I mean, that's recognized around the world. And I'm sure they're just so grateful for all the work and effort that you put into to do that. You still have the tug to get back to the Sudan and get back to your family's roots?
Yeah, I do, man. I really want to go back here soon. And there's a lot of things that I want to do. I have a lot of ambitions, for the future and helping my people out. So being able to have an avenue like ball and being able to have that, potential to do a lot of things with this game, I think it gives me motivation, to work hard, to continue to work hard and continue to do the right things, stay on the right track and, be a beacon of light for my people. So it keeps me working, man. These are things that I think about, just about every night, and it keeps me driven and focused and, excited to get every opportunity to go out and compete.
How often do you get a chance to talk to your dad?
You know, not too often. You know, I'm really close to my mom. We speak super often, really close to all my siblings. And, you know, come from a big family. I got a really large extended family, mm-hmm. a lot of cousins. So, you know, I'm really lucky to have a big tribe, a big family of support.
Well, you are more than well on your way to the track that you're trying to aspire to. You're doing just a terrific job. You're really inspirational to a lot of people. And Coyne, we wish you all the best, not only on the field, but life after football as well. And we're very confident that you're going to be highly successful in doing whatever you decide to do. So we appreciate you taking the time to be with us. And good luck this week and down the road as well.
No doubt. Appreciate you, Todd. Thank you for having me.
Oh, anytime. Glad to talk to you. Coyne Dang, senior linebacker for the Bears as they take on the Oregon State Beavers, will be on the air with the broadcast beginning at 11:30 a.m. as the Beavers take on the Bears at Research Stadium. So that wraps it up for this week's show. Appreciate Justin Wilcox and Coyne Dang for being with us. And until the next time, I'm Todd McKim. Thanks for listening. And as always, go Bears.
This has been Bear in Mind, the official podcast of Cal Athletics with your host, Todd McKim. The preceding has been a Learfield IMG College presentation.